Hi there, I'm Michael Goldberg, here to remind you that if you can clap your hands, you can dance. And if you can stand up right now, I hope you will. Shake it just a little bit because, you know, how else are we going to stay human?
What we have, saying that it's not so bad. Never mind what people say. We don't believe them anyway. Sitting on suburban thrones, choosing what we want to know. Everybody's leaving, your face is out of season. reason. Well, I don't need a reason to stay.
That's Joni Fuller. No, 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 because everybody says so. Not her, though. Not me. Not you either, I bet. But I don't know. I might just be living in an alternate reality. There's a category of fiction, sometimes packaged as a subgenre of science fiction, called alternative history. What if the Black Plague had decimated 80% of Europe's population? What if the Civil War had never been fought? What if Germany and Japan had won World War II? What if the Jews of Europe had been given land not in the Middle East, but in Southeast Alaska? The stories that spin out from these and other what-ifs are really very provocative because they put our actual history, our present reality, into a new perspective. But mainly, they're fun and ultimately inconsequential. They're just stories. But I know someone who believed he actually had a chance to change history for real, that he had come this close, and he died tragically with the regret that he wasn't able to do it. In 1999, Senator Paul Wellstone was running for president. His campaign was concentrated in Iowa, aimed at the February Iowa caucus. His People First policies and his work in the Senate had made him very popular with farmers there and with families, with people actively trying to make their communities better places. And he had a strong grassroots campaign going throughout the state. Before the caucus, he was forced to withdraw from the race for health reasons later revealed to be multiple sclerosis. The last time I saw Paul Wellstone was in 2002, after the Supreme Court had assigned that election to George Bush, and after the Bush-Cheney administration had begun to beat the drum for the invasion of Iraq. It was a small, private meeting, just friends, and he told us this story. "I was going to win in Iowa," he said, "and I'm not just saying that. I wouldn't say it if it was iffy. We were going to win that caucus in an upset victory, which would have meant that I'd have had the full attention of the national press for a few weeks after, when I would do a Bobby Kennedy-style poverty tour of the country, bringing issues of inequality and economic security right to the front of the campaign. There's no way I was going to win the party nomination, but I would have been campaigning hard, which would have forced Gore to take a much more aggressive populist line, enough more that it just could have won him the election itself. It hurts so much to think about it," he said, "that things could have been so different." His story filled me with sorrow, not for how things could have been different, because, really, who knows? Alternative histories are endless in their variety, and their effects are no more knowable than the timeline we're actually in. We can't predict the imagined future any more than we can the real one. No, my sorrow was for Paul Wellstone himself, this man that I admired and learned so much from and loved, that he was living with the belief that but for his illness, he could have made an even bigger difference for millions of people than he already had in his public service. It hurt him so much. And when he died a few months later, I thought of that grief and his burden, and how the plane crash had changed history again. how we all have to go on, never knowing what might have been, never knowing what will be as a result of the choices we make, the actions we take. How many thousands of us since that day have done our work, aware that we pale in comparison to that little giant, but knowing too that he believed in us, in the compassion and the power and the dignity of all of us. We go on into the next generation and the next, inspired by him, believing with him that we all do better when we all do better. The Ebony Bones with O Promised Land. As you probably know, the President's Commission on Long Weekends is now accepting recommendations from the public toward its goal of making sure there are 3 or 4 day weekends at least twice a month, because we need way more national holidays. One of my picks for July is the anniversary of the birth of Paul Wellstone. He was born July 21st, back in 1944, and I certainly don't think we should wait till 2044 to make a big deal of it, though those generations will need to be reminded of him too and learn from him just as much as we do today. Today on Stay Human, we'll celebrate Wellstone Day with some memories of Paul, including from Minnesota Senator Al Franken. But first, we have this piece from storyteller Ann Dunn of Leech Lake Reservation. Ann first recorded this piece for us in October of 2012, on the 10th anniversary of the fatal plane crash.
I was locked down in the federal prison at Sandstone, Minnesota that day. I'd been invited to join Native American inmates, their families, and friends for a traditional feast, powwow, and storytelling event. Therefore, it was not until we left and found a place to have a quiet supper that I learned Senator Paul Wellstone had died in a plane crash near Eveleth. Also killed was his wife, Sheila, their daughter, Marcia, 3 campaign staffers, and 2 pilots. They were on their way to a funeral. I had 2 big green Wellstone yard signs, one in the yard and the other in the window. I left that one up in the yard until it disintegrated. The other one I kept safe but lost during one of my frequent moves. After his death, a lot of cars carried "What Would Wellstone Do?" bumper stickers. I had a WWD dog tag, but I can't find it now. I guess that got lost too. I do have an old black and white photograph that I took during the 1994 American Indian Religious Freedom Act hearing in Minneapolis. It was taken from a great distance and shows a blur of faces at a long table. One of the blurs is Wellstone. Also present were Senators Daniel Inouye and Ben Lighthorse Campbell. Not long before his death, Wellstone explained why he served in the Senate. "I don't represent the big oil companies, the big pharmaceuticals, or the big insurance industry. They already have great representation in Washington. It's the rest of the people that need representation." The first Senate vote he cast in 1991 was to oppose U.S. military action in the Persian Gulf. 11 years later, he cast his last vote against a resolution authorizing President George W. Bush to use force against Iraq. They said he had difficulty in school and later found he had a learning disability, but the 5'5" student was a champion wrestler, undefeated in high school. At the University of North Carolina, he won the Atlantic Coast Conference Championship in his 126-pound weight class. While still in college, he married Sheila. They had 3 children, David, Marcia, and Mark. After graduation, he accepted a teaching post at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota, where he taught political science for 21 years. While teaching, he was arrested twice, once at a Vietnam War protest at the Federal Building in Minneapolis, and a second time at a local bank where he was protesting farm foreclosures. He also challenged the college's investments in apartheid South Africa, picketed with strikers at a meatpacking plant, and taught his classes off campus to avoid crossing a picket line during a strike by Carleton's custodians. Needless to say, the college administration fired him for his activism, but the students waged a sit-in and an aggressive protest in his behalf. Instead of terminating him, he was rehired and granted tenure 1 year early. In 1990, underdog Senate candidate Wellstone ran a grassroots campaign against Senator Rudy Bosuich, who outspent Wellstone 7-1. Wellstone rallied a dynamic volunteer force and traveled the state in his trademark bus, which he called the Lean Green Campaign Machine. Despite the low budget, Wellstone won 50.4% of the vote and unseated the incumbent. By 2002, Wellstone said he was spending most of his time on defense, battling attacks on working families, and preventing things like oil drilling in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. That same year, he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Although it diminished his energy and put a limp in his step, it didn't compromise his enthusiasm. He has been called the happy warrior and used to say, "You have to do this job with a twinkle in your eye." His most famous quote is probably, "Never separate the life you live from the words you speak." My favorite Wellstone quote is reminiscent of John Lennon. "Sometimes the only realists are the dreamers."
Imagine there's no heaven. Believe if you try. No heaven. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries, one heart to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion too. Oh, and having all the people living in the world in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer. I'm not the only one. Hope someday you'll join us. And the world will be one. Whoa, 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 whoa. Imagine no possession. Hunger, oh brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing in all the world. You may think I'm a dreamer.
Stevie Wonder does John Lennon on Stay Human. heard every Sunday night on Northern Community Radio and KAXE.org. My name is Michael Goldberg. As I was thinking about Paul Wellstone this week, I asked my friend Karen Noyce what it was like to have him as a teacher. She and her husband, Art Norton, both attended Carleton College in the early 1970s when Wellstone was fresh out of graduate school. They both took classes from him in order to fulfill distribution requirements. Karen studied biology, Art geology, and they said he had a reputation for being an easy grader. But it turned out they got a lot more from him than they'd expected.
Well, he loved people. It was obvious that he loved people. And in the classroom, he would come in, you know, he looked about 18, 20 maybe. And he'd come in, you know, he's a wrestler, and he'd come in his tight shirts, tight t-shirts and jeans, and maybe a few minutes late. And he'd just start to talk. And he was never, ever, ever at a loss for words. And it was always point one and two and three, la-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then he'd flash that smile in the middle of things. He was always flashing that smile, and it would kind of disarm you from whatever it was that you're getting. You know, it's like, yeah, see, you get what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was that kind of a smile. Mm-hmm. So it was just total entertainment, the whole class. If you were on campus at all, you knew who Paul Wellstone was. You knew of him. You always heard of OBRC, which was Organization for a Better Rice County. And this is a thing that he, you know, within his first couple of years there, he got going. It was a grassroots organization for the rural poor, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then before we graduated, he was also involved in the power line protests down there. Mm-hmm. And so here he is, he's on campus, and all of us are just students kind of confined to campus most of the time. And yet, you know that he's got this other life outside of campus, and he's doing all this political stuff out there, really active things. And it was just kind of, he was a real inspiration. And so a number of people that we knew certainly were influenced to the point that they went on into public service and politics and all. Some of them went on to work on his campaigns in particular. It's absolutely true that what he said was who he was from day one. You could never doubt that.
Karen Noyce, remembering Paul Wellstone at the beginning of his teaching career. One of those classmates she was referring to was Bill Hilsman, whose brilliant work in advertising included the political ads he created for Wellstone's first Senate campaign in 1990, running as an underdog against the strong and well-funded incumbent Senator Rudy Boschwitz. Here's one TV spot Hilsman created for that campaign called Where's Rudy?
When I decided to run for Senate, there was one thing I was looking forward to. So, as it turns out, were a lot of you.
Well, I expect that there will be some debates.
I'd love to see you debate with him.
Well, I think there should be debates, yeah.
Some people have more money than others to play with, and where if you debate, you're kind of standing there without money.
Getting a hold of the person I had to debate, however, proved easier said than done.
Is Rudy Boschwitz here?
No, he's not.
You don't want me to go in?
No, we don't like strangers walking around.
First, I tried his campaign headquarters.
Then let me give you my home phone number, too, okay?
Sure. I'll make sure that he gets this, and we'll get back to you.
What do you think? Do you think we should have debates around the state?
I'll get the message to him.
What do you think?
Glad to meet you.
No, thanks, but about these debates.
Thanks for coming down.
Okay.
Make sure he gets your message.
All right, I'll see you all.
Nice car. Then I tried his office.
Is he here?
He is not here. He is returning from Milwaukee.
No luck.
I'll write my home phone.
Sure.
Is this your pen?
I'm not sure. Probably not.
Looks like a nice one. Well, I don't have a lot of money, so I'll keep this one for our campaign.
That will be fine.
I tried everything. I mean everything.
Rudy Boschwitz here.
No, not today.
Did Rudy Boschwitz call? Did anybody get a call from him?
No.
Well, if he calls everybody, let me know. Hey, you guys?
Okay, well, maybe I can find him somewhere then. Thank you very much. Okay, bye-bye.
They say he's in the cities. I don't know where he is. He's not in Minneapolis. They say he's campaigning, then I go to St. Paul. They say he's in Milwaukee.
Rest assured, there will be debates on the key issues of this campaign. Look for upcoming dates and places. And in the meantime, if you see a silver-haired gentleman in a plaid shirt, mention I'm looking for him.
Yes, information. Do you have the telephone number of a Rudy Boschwitz, please, in Plymouth?
A TV ad from Paul Wellstone's 1990 Senate campaign. Our current senator, Al Franken, says he never would have run for public office if it wasn't for Wellstone. I asked Senator Franken how he first met Paul.
Well, when I first met Paul, my parents really introduced him to me during his first campaign in 90. And my dad was in this is how grassroots Paul's campaigns were. My dad was in a senior citizens theater troupe for Paul's campaign. And, you know, at that, when my parents started knowing about Paul, he was kind of a long shot, but obviously that was an amazing election, and he won that. I remember that day that we did that. We just, I did my impression of Paul ordering breakfast. It was something like, I want those eggs. Those are the best eggs I've ever had. Those are great eggs. And I want that bacon. And I think Paul maybe didn't eat bacon. And then he said something. We just had fun, you know. There was so much energy at his, you know, at his events. And it was just, we just had an amazing amount of, he just energized me. And energize everybody around him. I mean, he had this thing where, if you remember, it's like the last 3 minutes were always just this thing where everyone would start grinning and standing up and cheering. And if he had a 20-minute speech, that last 3 minutes would come 17 minutes into the speech. And if he had an 8-minute speech, it'd come 5 minutes into it. And if he had a 4-minute speech, it'd come a minute into it. But he'd do that last 3 minutes, that ramp up, where you'd be just, you know, just going nuts. He was a very physical guy, you know. Like Paul, I was a wrestler. I was a high school wrestler. Unlike Paul, I was a mediocre wrestler. He was in the College Wrestling Hall of Fame. So he was a physical guy, you know. During my 08 campaign, David Wellstone rode the bus last couple weeks, and I had a question for David. I said that I'd been meaning to ask him. I said, you know, David, I heard that your dad had so much energy that when you kids played soccer, that your dad would run along the sidelines following the ball. He would just, no matter where the ball went, he'd run, he'd follow it, and he'd say, I say, is that true? And he said, yeah, but get this. I ran cross country. And I went, oh, no. And he said, yeah, he ran alongside the course with me. He wasn't on the trail. I mean, he was, like, alongside it. And he was, like, we were, like, 300 yards from the finish, and I was, like, 10 yards behind, my dad would start yelling, you can beat this guy, you can do it, you can take this guy, you can take it, you can take him, man, running alongside. And imagine how strange that was for the other kid. And David said, I'd be out of gas, you know, and but my dad would be there, and wouldn't you know it, I took the guy. So I asked my supporters to be my Paul, and they helped carry me over the finish line in 08, and they did. And I won by 312 votes. And so now I get to keep Paul's legacy alive. My mom ended up later, she started getting a bit of dementia, and more than a bit. And the last time I saw Paul in October of 2002, probably a couple weeks before the plane crash, I did an event for him in St. Paul, and it was, you know, he's in the toughest campaign of his life, had been a pretty vicious campaign. And I had been visiting my mom at the nursing home, and she was very, Paul asked me, the first thing he asked me, again, he's in the middle of the, you know, fight of his life, and the first thing he asked me is, how's your mom? And mom, in her room, had a picture from Paul, said, Phoebe, what's her name, you know, keep fighting. And I said to Paul, well, I couldn't even have a conversation. I couldn't talk with her today. And Paul said to me, you know, touch means so much. And that's what I needed to hear. We did our event. We had a great event. But then I went back to the nursing home. And it was a beautiful fall day. And I took my mom out to the garden that they had there. And I couldn't have a conversation with her, but I hugged her. I put my arm around her and sat in the garden. And I don't know if it meant much to my mom, but it meant an awful lot to me. And that was Paul, you know. You don't hear that kind of thing from most politicians. The first thing they say to you at an event for them isn't, how's your mom? And it isn't, touch means so much. So I miss him. But a lot of that was about his real attachment to people, his emotional attachment to people. I think that's why he continues to be a force in Minnesota politics and in progressive politics because just of who he was as a guy.
What you want, go on, be who you are. You may write me down in history.
You may write me down in history.
With your bitter, twisted lies.
With your bitter, twisted lies.
You may trod me.
You may trod me.
In the very dirt.
In the very dirt.
But still like dust.
But still like dust. I'll rise.
I'll rise.
Does my sassy name upset you? Why are you beset with gloom?
Why are you beset with gloom?
Cause I walk like I've got all wells. I'm thinking by living wrong.
Just like gloom.
Just like gloom.
Like.
And like sun.
And like sun.
With the sun.
With the certainty
of time,
just like
just
hope,
like hope
springing high,
springing high, still I rise.
Did you want to see me broken?
Did you want to see me broken?
Bowed head
and lowered eyes.
By my soulful cry.
Does my heart keep this for you? Don't you take it awful hard.
Don't take it awful hard.
Cause I live like I've got gold mines digging in my
eye. You may shoot me with your words.
You may shoot me with
you may cut me with your eyes.
You may cut me with your eyes.
You may kill me with your hatefulness.
You may kill me with your hatefulness.
But still like life, I'll rise. That my ancestors gave. I am the hope and the dream of the slave.
That's Maya Angelou with her poem, Still I Rise, on Stay Human, because poetry matters. And Minnesotans know it, too. That's why, for every $100 anybody spends in the state, about 7 cents goes into the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, which helps support this and other programs on Northern Community Radio. One local series that has received these funds is The Beat, featuring Minnesota poets and produced by Steve Downing.
Aaron Wanger is a retired educator, an engineer who became a teacher, and helped transform Itasca Community College's engineering program. His interests are many and varied and include the arts, especially as a component of turning out better engineers. He's Northern Community Radio's staff physicist, and he's a poet. Here's Aaron Wanger.
We had a bear, a cinnamon, that used to come to the creek below our cabin and would flip suckers up on the bank till she got about a bushel of them. Then she'd go up and lie on the suckers like a hog in corn and eat them for about 15 minutes. She was an amazing bear, and this is for her. Bear fish suckers all spring long. Don't think he'd ever figured they'd stop. Something to watch him lying on a near-dead fish, feeling sun on his black back, sucking that fish in like a drunk on a paper bag bottle. Then May frost killed the blueberries, everyone. Bear never even noticed. Still feeling sun, eating ants. Don't know winter freeze gonna kill him. Summer still kind, Bear. Bear got that over me. Stars I've seen, walked in far places, even sometimes seen. One god-awful price, though, no more than soul can carry. No, my winter freeze is coming. Might rather be the bear.
That's Aaron Wenger with his bear poem. We'll be hearing more of his poems and stories on Stay Human in the weeks ahead. I haven't seen any bears in the wild blueberry patches this year, at least not yet. The berries aren't ripe, so... Seems like most years, there are stories from neighbors about bears bending down the bird feeder or camping under the crabapple tree, sometimes ripping through a screen door to help themselves to whatever was left unguarded. Some years back, we had a bear crossing the bridge across the creek into our yard on a regular basis. Way too comfortable there for our comfort. Gail chased it off a couple of times, banging pots and pans. Then one day, she came home from work, I was out of town at the time, to find that our faithful dog was nowhere to be seen. A female lab mix, she never left the yard without us. Gail called and called for her, was crying by dark when she still couldn't find her. No sign of her in the morning. She came straight home from work to walk in every direction from our house, calling and calling, and then suddenly there she was, unhurt, but her face and head covered with dirt. Apparently, she'd dug herself a hole and hidden in it for more than 24 hours. Physically unhurt, but she was so traumatized that she wouldn't leave the house without elaborate coaxing, refused to walk with us up the driveway unless we put her on a leash. And this went on for months. All that winter, I could barely go cross-country skiing because she'd insist on trying to run along between my skis. Even the following summer, she was skittish, always expecting the worst. But gradually, while she's not exactly what you'd call brave, she's been able once again to explore the grounds and bark fiercely, though never go after any animals she smells in the woods. I don't really know if she's overcome her fear or just learned to live with it, not let it get in the way. That would be the definition of courage. Always feel like I can learn something from my dog. Here's a song from Gnarls Barkley to help her build up her courage. Mine too.
Now I can sing you the storyline, and if you like my story, fine, but ain't none of the glory mine. See, my life was a lonely one, and I was dear mama's only son, with no idea what I'm gonna become. And I didn't have long to know that you don't have to be grown to go. I could have died so long before. Then I finally saw the sign, on down the line, one step at a time. I feel better, I can smile at it now. I feel better, oh, better, and even a little is still better. Oh, have mercy on me. Oh, it's probably plain to see that I got a whole lot of pain in me, and it will always remain in me. So cold, it's a crying shame. Yet here I I'm trying again, 'cause I refuse to die in vain. The circumstances put soul in me, and there ain't no holding me. I've got a heart made of gold in me. Can you believe this is where I've been? And when adversity comes again, I'll deal with it then. I feel better, I can laugh at it now. I feel better, oh, better. And a little is still better. Oh, have mercy.
Yes, I feel this one more time.
Music from Trombone Shorty, Get the Picture. I'm hoping you got it and can keep on the beat. Thanks for letting me roll along with you for a little while here. I'm Michael Goldberg at Northern Community Radio. And thanks for giving me a reason to do this radio show. It shouldn't be too hard, is what I tell myself. All we gotta do is stay human.